Yeah, so brand new malacha. Malacha is the malacha of lush, which we'll define loosely as kneading. Kneading with a K. So I say loosely because we'll see as we discuss this, especially in this opening Gemara, that it's, you could say kneading, you could say mixing, you could say concocting. Kneading is something that is, it's a term that's used when we're speaking about actual dough, but we'll see that this malacha really can include a lot more than just dough. We spoke about this, I think, at the very beginning of Boer, but where does the actual malacha come from? So the actual malacha itself comes from, probably not from the lechem apanim themselves and from the baking of actual breads and menachos and needing to knead dough in that capacity. Most assume that that is not an appropriate source for any of the malachos. Right, that the malachos really emanate from a different source altogether, a different place altogether, and it needs to be the actual construction of the Mishkan, not the regular functioning thereof. So it's not the bread that was baked inside, and it's not the karbanos mincha that were offered therein, but rather the actual construction, which meant more likely the grinding, crushing, mixing, concocting of the different elements that they would use for dyeing purposes and the different textiles and materials that needed to be used. So the first step, the first stage would be like grinding them and shmushing. Shmushing is the technical term. Mm-hmm. They would be shmushed into some kind of paste, and that paste would then be used for dye. Fine. So it's clearly not just limited to the making of actual dough. And we'll see that very clearly. So there's going to be a lot more, I think, background that we'll need to attack when it comes to lush than when it came to Boer. Boer is sort of like off and running. We get the idea you have to separate, you have to sort. We spoke about the three criteria of miyad, biyad, ochel, mitoch, psoles. And then we were kind of like ready to go when it came to some of the more practical halacha lemaisa questions. There's a little bit more background that we need, and this Gemara is really a great place to start. So this is the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yud Ches, Amud Aleph. Let's take a look. A little bit of backdrop is that this Gemara is dealing with a statement made in the Mishnah that came immediately prior, which spoke about, at least according to Beis Shammai, that you cannot leave the pigments that would be used for dio, for ink, cannot leave those pigments soaking in water on Erev Shabbos, because Beis Shammai effectively holds that you cannot set anything even into motion on Erev Shabbos that's going to complete a malacha on Shabbos itself. We don't hold that. Beis Hillel argues that's effectively the concept of Shvisas Kalim. Do I need to ensure and entrust that even my inanimate objects, so to speak, are at rest on Shabbos, that no malacha is being performed with them? Beis Shammai says that, yes, that is your responsibility. You need to make sure that your whole house and all of your kalim, all of your utensils, all of your machinery, everything is at rest. And Beis Hillel says that, no, that's not really my concern, as long as I personally am actually performing any malacha, that's really all that matters. From the fact that Beis Shammai holds that you can't even leave this soaking on Erev Shabbos, though, whether we pass on Beis Shammai or not, you certainly get the impression that done on Shabbos, that that's absolutely a malacha. So what we're dealing with is leaving soaking some kind of very dark black pigment in water, and that would be sufficient to constitute its own act of malacha. And the question then is why? Why is just the soaking of those whatever you want to call it, that pigment, that powder, why is that sufficient for a malacha to have been transgressed? Okay, that's really the Gemara's question. So here we go. So Mantana, who's the one who taught that Nesinas Mayim Ledio Zuhi Shriyasan? Who's the one who taught that the mere soaking of the dio, the mere soaking, the dio is really the finished ink product, but here we're referring to the soaking of the pigment that makes the dio. Who says that that's good enough, that that's considered to be sufficient in terms of the manufacture of this ink, enough to say that the malacha has actually been violated? Rav Yosef says, I'll tell you who it was. It was Rebbe. How do you know? Because we have the following brisa. The sinyas was taught in the brisa, Echad no sein es hakemach, ve echad no sein es hamayim. You have two guys. One guy brings the flour. This is like how it's done in the matzah bakery, right? One guy, everything is kept like very, very quarantined and sterile, and make sure that the mayim never touches any particle of flour or anything. So you keep the flour in one section and the water in another section. One guy pours in the flour, the other guy pours in the water, and then the kneader starts to knead it, starts to mix it. So one guy brings the water, or one guy brings the flour in this case, one guy brings the water. Ha'achron chayev. The last guy is chayev. So meaning, Reuven puts the flour in the bowl, he hasn't done anything. Shimon puts the water into the bowl that the flour is already inside of. Shimon is chayev. Now you might ask, well, what did he do? There hasn't yet been any concoction. Apparently, divrei Rebbe, apparently according to Rebbe, that is sufficient in of itself to violate, to transgress the malacha of lush. Simply adding the liquid to some other element that can become integrated, that can become dissolved, that can become that could cohere or adhere to that liquid medium, that's enough to actually violate the malacha of lush in of itself. Fine, that's Rebbe. First part of the Braisa, first opinion in the Braisa. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi says that no, eino chayav. This is what we'd probably expect. Eino chayav ad shigabel. You're only chayav once you actually mix, once you actually knead. Nobody's chayav. Reuven put in the flour. Shimon puts in the water. Levi's chayav. What does Levi do? Levi actually gets his hands dirty. Levi's actually mixing it. And once you mix it, that's when you're chayav. But nobody who brings the individual elements, even though you're adding flour to a bowl that already has water in it, that in of itself is really not kneading. It should be noted that the way this is understood is that even according to Rabbi Yossi, this is, by the way, Rabbi Yossi Berebi Yehuda, but even according to Rabbi Yossi, it is only considered, it's only that you're not chayav, but, meaning on a da'oraisa level, but this is still asur midirabbanan. I'm not chayav on a da'oraisa level, but it would still be prohibited midirabbanan. Meaning, yes, on a da'orabbanan level, though, everybody would agree, or at the very least on a da'orabbanan level, everybody would agree, you have a bowl of flour, asur to actually pour water into it. Taking that in its own, without further elaboration, without further elucidation, meaning depending on quantities and depending on how it's done, but flour, bowl of flour, pouring water into a bowl of flour on Shabbos, aser, midrabanan, at least according to Rabbi Yossi, even before you actually further knead it. Okay, so that is Rav Yosef's assessment. According to Rav Yosef, that is what's taking place. That's what's happening. That's why our Mishnah seems to imply that simply pouring water, just pouring water into that dried, powdered, black pigment in order to make the ink, that in of itself is problematic. Okay. Amalei Abaye. Hey, Lee. Amalei Abaye. Abaye says as follows. Abaye argues with Rav Yosef, or five lines down. So Amalei Abaye says back to Rav Yosef, and maybe not. V'dilma ad kan lo ka'am Rav Yosef b'kemach. Maybe Rabbi Yossi says, you know what's usher? You know what's mutter? You know when you're allowed to pour the water into the flour? You're allowed to pour the water into the flour, at least that you're not, it's not considered an isur d'oraisa to pour the water into the flour. When you're talking about something like flour, that is when you're dealing with debar gibul hu. It is a bar gibul, it's something kneadable. It's something mixable. It's something that requires mixing. It's something that mixing will help. It's something that will be enhanced by an actual kneading process. Aval dayo, but to presume that should also be equally applicable to dayo, to making ink, the lav bar gibel hu, which is not a bar gibel in the first place. It can't really be kneaded. There's no need for kneading, if you follow that. Ema lichayev. I would tell you that maybe you should be chayev. Effectively as follows. What Abaye is suggesting is something that, at least on the face of it, is counterintuitive, but if you think about it, actually makes a lot of good sense. What Abaye is suggesting is as follows. We have this machlokas between two Tanaim. We have Rebbe, and we have Rebbe Yossi b'Rebbe Yehuda. Rebbe holds that I'm not, that it would be an Isser de'oraisa to pour liquid into something that is then going to become congealed is not a good word, but mixed, that's going to solidify to some degree, that's going to become bound and more cohesive by pouring liquid into it. Just pouring the liquid into it, that is enough to be usher and to be usher mida oraisa. That's Rebbe. Rebbe Yossi says, no. Just because you pour the water, that's not, you haven't yet violated the actual malacha, you have to actually knead it. Rav Yossi says, so good, so that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the ink. You know why pouring the liquid into the ink is an issur d'oraisa? Maybe the reason why pouring the liquid into the ink is an issur d'oraisa is because we're tracking Rebbe. And according to Rav Yossi, it would be mutter. Rav Yossi b'Rebbe Yehuda. It would be mutter. Okay? Or at least it wouldn't be an issur d'oraisa. It would only be an issur d'rabbanan. Abayi says, no, just the opposite. Just the opposite, or at least just the opposite for Rebbe Yossi. Meaning as follows. If you have a mixture that would benefit from further mixing, then mixing is necessary. Then mixing is a critical component of the fulfillment or the violation of that malacha. It is only those things, it's only those items that if you require further mixing, that's when mixing is actually required. Or that if further mixing would be helpful, that further mixing is actually required. If further mixing isn't going to do anything, so then there's no need to mix, that means that mixing is no longer part of the malacha. Take something like dayo, and here's the actual metzias, here's the actual reality. That you have this like powdery kind of pigment. Pour water into it, no further mixing necessary. It's just going to sit there, it's going to steep, and it's going to naturally become completely concocted all on its own. Compare and contrast that to pouring water into flour. We all know that if you're making dough, you actually have to knead it. Since you have to knead it, since you haven't really accomplished anything, you haven't fulfilled anything, remember the concept of the Melechus Machsheves, right? We haven't actually fulfilled anything, you haven't really accomplished anything simply by pouring water in. There's so much more that needs to get done. Rabbi Yossi would say that you haven't violated the Melechah if there's still so much yet more to do. When you pour the water into the ink, though, then he would agree that that's aser, because there's nothing more to do. You've already accomplished everything. The more that there is to do, according to Abaye, according to Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda, the more there is to do, the more that's required to do in order to actually violate the malacha, which is significantly machmir. Significantly machmir.
Doesn't have to do with consistency?
What's that?
Doesn't have to do with consistency?
Consistency becomes its own ball of wax, but presuming that we're dealing with the kind of consistency that in the first place would be considered a gibul, or would be considered a, you know, an isa, or anything that you might be chayav in lush for, so then simply adding the water is significant, is considered to be a violation of the malacha, as long as, this is at least according to Abaye, as long as there's no further kneading required. If there is further kneading required, so then Abaye says, then Rabbi Yossi would hold that you actually have to do that. But if you don't need to do any more than just let it sit and let it steep, then that's good enough, and you've already violated the malacha.
It just needs mixing, but it doesn't change the consistency.
So if it needs, but it, meaning if it needs mixing in order to become fully bound up with, let's say, with the liquid that you're trying to integrate it into, then you would have, that would be considered a bar gibul, right? That's something that requires mixing, that requires kneading, and since it requires mixing and kneading, it's only after you actually do that that you come upon the real issur d'oraisa, according to Rabbi Yossi. Okay, so there's a lot out here.
So
and really,
just the temperature of water. I mean, some things will automatically go into water without any mixing if it's warm. If it's cold, it won't do.
So that's very interesting. I wonder, that might actually change the determination of whether or not it is a bar gibul or not. Meaning, in its present state, if what you've added is something that will allow for, you know, the full mixing or the full cohesion to take place all on its own, so then that's sufficient, right? If you need either additional temperature or you need some, you know, kinetic energy in order to make it happen, so then that's what you would still need to happen, and then it wouldn't really be considered to be a full malacha according to Abaye, according to Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. So what you basically have, and I just want to underscore the following. Ultimately, what difference does it make if we're dealing with an issur d'oraisa or dealing with an issur d'rabbanan? So it matters everywhere. It matters a lot more when it comes to this particular malacha. The reason why it matters everywhere is because whenever you're dealing with an issur d'rabbanan as opposed to an issur d'oraisa, what does that mean? It means that it's just optional. You don't really have to do it. No. What it means is that there may well be certain scenarios in which we can presume that takana was never made in the first place, or that gezeira was never made in the first place. Very, very common scenario is something like a hefsed merubah. right? If there is going to be a significant, significant loss of money, we know that you're not allowed to ask a non-Jew to perform work for you on Shabbos. Why not? It's fully permissible for him to perform work on Shabbos. It's only us or for me to perform work on Shabbos. So at least, let's say, according to the Rambam, it seems that the issue is that I become acquainted to having malacha done on my behalf. The next thing you know, I'm actually doing the malacha myself. So it's problematic. You're playing with fire, and therefore you stay away from it, and that's the actual gezerah. But in a scenario of, let's say, a makom mitzvah, or in a scenario of, let's say, a chola, or a scenario of a hafsin meruba, it's not so much that we say that those are overriding factors. Right, pikuach nefesh is an overriding factor. Pikuach nefesh is docha Shabbos. Pikuach nefesh is a more significant value than Shabbos. Right, the issue is not that money is a more significant value than amir la'akum, than asking a non-Jew to do work for me. The issue is that I can effectively presume, and we know that the purpose of this takana was never meant to be upheld, even in a scenario in which I might sustain a sizable loss, or even in a scenario where it might become compromising for somebody who's otherwise unwell, a chola to whatever degree. Right, so because there are scenarios in which we say, the Rabbana never would have insisted that this actually be upheld in certain scenarios, becomes really, really critical to figure out, are we dealing with an issue of the Rice, or are we dealing with an issue of the Rabbana? I have no right to make a presumption about when Hashem wants his mitzvahs to be kept and not. Generally, unless we have these overarching principles like Pikuach Nefesh and that sort of thing. But I don't have the right to say that, listen, Hashem, you don't really want me to avoid, or you don't really want me to sustain a $10,000 loss just for the sake of something as silly as, not needing dough on Shabbos. We have absolutely zero right to make that assumption. When it comes to Isurei Derabbanan, though, that's very much part of the system. There are scenarios in which we know that the Rabbanan would not have been gozer, would not have upheld their takanas. That's why this all becomes very, very important. Particularly when it comes to the malacha of lush, we find this is rather unique when it comes to this malacha. We're going to speak about this next shiur, that the ability to perform lush through the act of, let's say, shinui or kilachar yad, that you do it in an offhanded, backhanded sort of manner, oftentimes becomes permissible, and there's even greater latitude when we're dealing with an Isser Derabbanan as opposed to an Isser De'oraisa. That if I'm not really mixing it in the manner that usually you would mix something, or usually you would need something, then potentially there's even greater latitude to be able to say that something is mutter. So trying to qualify all this and know what we're talking about is really, really very important. Which means as follows. At the end of this Gemara, we basically have two issues. Issue number one, is, and this is the subject of this machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Yehuda. Issue number one is it problematic, or is it an Isser De'oraisa, or only an Isser De'rabbanan, to simply add the liquid? If I'm just adding the liquid and I'm not actually kneading, is that already an Isser, or is it not yet an Isser? Or is it an Isser De'oraisa, or is it only an Isser De'rabbanan? Right. I'm certainly not permitted to add liquid into something that's going to become kneaded together or be kneaded afterwards. But is that only on a Derabbanan level, or is that even on a De'oraisa level? Rebbe would say that it's an Isser De'oraisa, just to add the liquid. Rebbe Yehuda says that no, it's only an Isser De'rabbanan. How do we actually paskin? For the most part, we assume, poskim seem to assume overwhelmingly, like Rebbe Yossi, Rebbe Yehuda, that we are mekel, that we assume that it's not an Isser De'oraisa, it's an Isser De'rabbanan to add the water. Some few say that even just adding the water is an Isser De'oraisa. This is really in a theory for a loop. The minhag is to try to be machmir, except for some outstanding circumstances. We're going to deal with those next week. But for the most part, it seems like this tracks Rabbi Yossi Bar Yehuda. We do our best whenever possible to avoid at all costs putting even the water into the actual mixture, even though we haven't actually needed it yet.
So what are some examples?
Examples. Let's say...